Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Human Challenge, where we explore all the human challenges in today's world, the challenges of being human, and how we can challenge ourselves to be more human for the greater good. I'm your host, Vanessa Ferlano, and today we're talking to Julia Rivard-Dexter, CEO of Shoelace Learning, based in Halifax, who took her time today off the ski hill to come in, say hi, and chat with everybody about
Don't
what she's
tell
up to.
Vanessa. you're spilling my secret.
No, I'm super happy to have you here. Thank you so much. Very grateful for your presence. Love the work that you do. Also love your story. And so I would love for you to maybe start off by telling us a little bit about your journey, because you also grew up in Northern Ontario, just like I did.
I did.
Love that connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then how that ended up leading to what you do now with Shoelace Learning.
Sure. It's a windy road. Yes, grew up in North Bay, not far from you. And I grew up as an athlete. I was a big swimmer as a kid. I loved athletics, mainly because I wasn't good at school. So it was kind of a place where I could excel. I always had a dream from a very young age of being an Olympic athlete. I don't think the pathway was super clear because there weren't a lot of Olympic athletes around me, but I just wanted that so badly as a young kid. I think the closest thing to it was Alex Bowman in Sudbury at the time. And so he was a big Canadian icon for me. And yeah, so I swam for years until in high school, I was in a ski accident actually and I broke my back. And that took me out of swimming and really took away my shot to make it to the games. But I still had this desire to do something really, really great. And luckily I found the sport of canoe a couple of years later and trained for 4 years and made the Olympic Games in Australia. And that it was such an amazing opportunity for me because it gave me this sense that being the best in the world at something is so possible. You know, it's right there with some good luck and some hard work. And it's been something I've been able to transfer into other parts of my life, which has been awesome. So I, you know, after the Olympics in Australia, retired and couldn't find a job because sports sometimes isn't seen as a, you know, work experience. So I just started working on my own. I started just selling my own wares as a graphic designer, eventually built a technology company around that and grew that to be quite a successful technology company. And then fast forward a few years, I had three young kids at the time, and one of my kids was really struggling with reading. And with my experience at school too, I was just feeling for him. You know, my heart was going out to him. Smart kid, so I knew he could do it, and I thought maybe I can apply my background in technology and building engaging applications to try to help him and kids like him improve his reading. And so that's what got me into it. I spent several months shadowing teachers in the classroom, really trying to understand what the problem was, and made some really, really cool learnings during that time that I applied to what we have now, which is Shoelace Learning. So that's kind of the very brief, very abbreviated story.
No, thank you so much for sharing. I love a lot of those themes that you're talking about. We had on the show previously, I don't know if you know Miranda Aiem, she was on the Team Canada for basketball.
Yeah.
She came on and talked a lot about the journey of being an Olympic athlete. Yeah. It was like you go through, you work so hard, and then afterwards, you know, your Olympic lifespan is so short that the realities of finding work after, you know, she talked a lot about that. And so I'm always really grateful to hold space for that conversation because I don't think that we as a general public understand that reality for athletes, that it is, you know, that lifespan is so short, and to come out afterwards, you know, to have to create your own opportunities in the way that you did and the way that she's done. I think it's a very important, you know, thing to be known. And so yeah, I'm really, really, really appreciative of that perspective a lot.
Yeah. It's you create such an identity as an athlete. Like that is so much your identity. You've done it since you were, you know, a young kid, and oftentimes you don't know much more. So it can be really scary to take that leap of faith and try something new. I think the other hard part about it is you really kind of have to start from the bottom again, right? It's not like you're transitioning into something at the same level. I've always thought about it as like a mountain. You know, you're climbing a mountain and finally you get to the top and then you have to start all the way over again. But that experience is also really helpful because it just kind of tells you early on that you can reinvent yourself. Like it's really important, I think, as a human to know that you can start over and reinvent yourself. And sometimes you have to. So it's a good lesson to learn when you're young, if you can. But I know a lot of athletes struggle with that transition. It can be really tough.
Yeah, I love that so much, that it's reinventing yourself. And I think, you know, for myself, when I think of my life and my journey, I feel like you're just consistently doing that, like regardless of whatever aspect of life you're in, there's always, you're just kind of always reinventing some part of yourself. There's always something you're kind of healing. And then, you know, you just kind of keep becoming this new version of yourself all the time. And so I absolutely love that message so much.
Yeah, it's really, it's been a nice, it's been a nice thing to learn kind of early on, because, you know, I shouldn't say you start at the bottom of the mountain again, because you can take a lot of what you've learned and apply it to your new journey. And I think that reinvention piece is really important, because especially in, you know, so I'm in entrepreneurship, I'm in technology and innovation, and failure rates are super high. And you're constantly right on the edge of that. And this idea that, well, you're always, everything you're doing is going to be taken to be, you know, to propel you into something else. Like, it's never a full loss what you're working on. It's always going to be used to help you take on the next challenge. And that's just such a, it's a calming mindset, because it takes away this need to achieve all the time and always be moving up. Like, it's okay to have those cycles of learning and relearning. I think I heard recently this idea of happiness being, instead of like trying to reach a state of happiness, this sense of you're always kind of moving in and out of it, and it's never a state to reach. And I really like that idea, how that applies, you know. It's cool.
Absolutely. I'm a certified mindfulness meditation guide, and my specific training was around trauma-informed practices and social justice. But, you know, when you think of like Buddha, the Buddha practices, it's like happiness is not really a thing. It's like, what is the human experience? And it's this flow state, right? It's kind of this flow state of all these things, and that idea of transformation. So yeah, I think those are very, very strong messages. And I love this message of learning, unlearning, relearning. I mean, that is the truth of the human experience, regardless of industry you're in, regardless of who you are, how you identify. It's just like, that is literally the human experience. And so I love that. And I love that here, that especially with what you do with your company, because, you know, you're based around, I know you were talking about like human generated content, how it informs language models, you know, and so like, it's a very like human centered approach. Right. And so I'm curious if you want to share a little bit more about that, you know, like some of the things that you're working on and why you've taken this particular approach to like content development. You talked about your son to learning, why this was the approach you took with your organization.
Yeah, well, I mentioned, you know, shadowing teachers in the classroom, and that was just such a critical time for me. You know, I'd spend every day for about 3 months in the classroom watching teachers teach, and that I was really trying to find kind of the key to what would help kids improve their literacy. I was focused on reading, on literacy. But what I learned was, it was kind of unexpected. I really learned that teachers were struggling with behavior management more than anything in the classroom. Like, kids were just checked out. They weren't interested in the content. And I think because we have so much great content for kids and interactive content, it's just really hard to use traditional resources to engage them. So that was my first piece. I was like, okay, well, we have to create something that's going to be engaging, because if they don't check in, everything else is a loss. And then the other piece was about personalization of content. Like, kids were all over the map in terms of their skills. So how could we use technology to really personalize the content for them so that they could have their own learning pathway and really support teachers? And I gained so much respect for teachers through this process. You know, their jobs are so hard. And so that's the way we started. Built Shoelace. We launched Shoelace Learning in 2020. And the focus was not on the learning to read piece. You know, that piece is totally separate, you know, and it's very, very skills based. We focus on comprehension. Comprehension's interesting to me because there's over 100 sub skills to be strong with comprehension, everything from basic skills up to, you know, synthesizing, predicting. And I think right now, the latest numbers that I saw from last year's, there's in the US, kids do a test. Across the country, everyone does it. And I think it was 60% of kids were reading below basic by grade 8. It's just a major, major problem. And if kids can't comprehend, they can't do the jobs that we need them to do today. So I got really excited about trying to find ways to help teachers get kids to master their subcomprehension skills and become strong at being able to understand, think critically, think creatively. So that's been the journey with Shoelace. What's been interesting along the way is I've realized that a lot of education is built to just teach the skills to kids, but skills are kind of just the baseline. After skills, you have to get kids to build the muscles of empathy, to understand there are other perspectives than their own. And I think with technology right now, we're really in a kind of dangerous space because we're reinforcing what we like with technology. And so we're going down more and more narrow pathways. And I think between K-12, we have kids as like a captive audience. And it's our job in education to broaden their thinking, to give them multiple perspectives so that they can learn, yeah, I have a perspective and it's important, but there's these other perspectives that are also important and they can inform how I think. And I think if we do this, we have a really great opportunity to enable this generation of learners to really change the world because they have such an open mind to new possibilities. I do think we're right on the edge of going either way, though. Like, I think with technology, we could really narrow thinking, and we are narrowing thinking. So at Shoelace, what I'm trying to do is we're trying to build a platform that not only teaches kids reading and comprehension, but it also broadens their thinking, gives them the ability to see otherness, to appreciate otherness, and to understand how that can inform their thinking in the world.
I really appreciate that the mindfulness and the approach that you're taking, and especially in conjunction with, you know, what like you said, what we're seeing with tech now, it is very narrow-minded. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you follow a lot of, for example, when we look at in women's wellness, women's sexual wellness, the ad censorship that they get from tech companies, you know, like they're not, you know, an ad that has endometriosis is not allowed to, is like literally banned, is not allowed. It's like considered against the ad policies. And it's true. It comes from that narrow-mindedness approach of technology. And so I think it's extremely important. And especially with children, to be offering that to children, right. To be teaching them that, like you said, there's more than just the skills-based piece. Like, how do we kind of think critically? How do we think outside the box? And so I appreciate that level of mindfulness with technology and what you're developing, because it is everywhere and it is very harmful what we're seeing. And I agree with that. I've spent 10 years in tech myself. I've seen tons of different technologies under the sun. I've done diligence on over hundreds of technologies. And at a certain point, you know, it's like the tech itself. It's not even like the tech is the risk. It's like we're the risk because we're the ones using the technology and we're not teaching it properly, right? And so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny, our attitude with technology, especially today with you know, all the buzz around AI, it's kind of, there's the conversation is that it's going to happen to us rather than we as humans kind of control that output. And we have all the control. You know, one of the things we committed to a couple of years ago is to only have human generated content. And that was a really important decision, a very expensive decision for our company to make. But it was critical because I started to feel, I heard an AI guru once say, you know, AI is so powerful because the sum of all human knowledge is online. I just thought to myself, oh my gosh, there's so much of the human experience that's not online. So many stories that aren't published, so many experiences that aren't shared. And so we really started thinking critically about how we could build content for kids that would be culturally responsive. You know, they'd start to learn about otherness and about themselves too. But also content that's uplifting, you know, content that really is focused on positivity and empowerment, because there's so much out there that's negative. And I think we have a real responsibility as, you know, as humans to change that narrative, especially as we're using reinforcement models, because we don't want to reinforce negativity and bias. And, you know, we want to reinforce the good stuff. And so I think it's important that we take responsibility as developers of media, of content, of education in doing better. We can do so much better.
Agreed. I really appreciate that perspective. I wanted to ask you a few more questions. You know, you talked a little bit about culturally responsive, culturally sensitive content. Like you said, that's a huge decision to make as a business, as a businesswoman. And so how do you do that? You know, how do you make sure your content is more culturally responsible?
That's a great question. So we have a process, one that took us a long time to develop, and it's always being iterated on. We have writers, expert writers who create our content. And then we take that content and it goes through an external JEDI review process, a justice, equity, diversity, inclusion process. It often gets flagged for different things and it goes back to our writing team and then it goes back again to our JEDI team. We'll go through as many cycles as we need before our content gets published, and it has to be signed off on before it gets published. It's amazing the conversations that happen in these sessions. You know, I was in one earlier this year and there was a big conversation about, there was an animal in the passage and they called it. And the conversation was around, should we use pronouns for sentient beings? Like, it seems wrong to be calling them it. And long conversation about this, but, you know, and it's nuanced. You wouldn't think about it if you're reading it, but these conversations are, you know, we hold space so that we can actually think through kind of all of these little things that might be harmful or that could just be better. And I've been so impressed with that process. And then when we have learnings like that one that I just shared, then we bake it into the process so that when we're reviewing future content, we really understand, well, what are we looking for? What are we trying to do? But it's constantly a learning. Like, this is why I don't believe we can use technology to create content, to trust the creation of content, because the conversations are just so rich, so deep, and they lead to so many, you know, learnings that we just don't have until we have those conversations. So that's our process. Like I said, it's time consuming, but I know that Shoelace content is better than anything else out there. Like, I can stand behind every piece of it. And I feel awesome about that. Like, it's really important that we do that for kids.
Absolutely. And I think it's important we do it for everybody. You know, I'm very mindful of how I even use like AI in my own content creation. The most I've ever used it for is like maybe the editing, you know, because it's like easier to edit out your silences, right? Like your silent pauses. But like, I'm the same. I kind of go through every word, every piece to make sure that it's intentional, right? What is the intention behind this? What am I trying to create for my audiences? You know, what's the space I want to, you know, because if you think about it, this piece of content, like you said, is holding space with other people, right? So how is this content going to hold space with other people? And so I definitely think that intentionality is very much lost when we start really depending heavily on things like technology, on AI, like you said, especially when it's the same stories that are out there. There is so much, like you said, of the human experience that is not online, that is not on technology, that we're like missing out on. So what are we creating for future generations, right? What are we teaching future generations the human experience is, right? So I think, yeah, you know, the use of technology.
And it's all storytelling. And Vanessa, like, you know, obviously you're interested in storytelling. It's all about the stories we create. And one of the other things that we do that I love is we do storytelling workshops. So we go into communities with individuals who have voices that may not have been published traditionally, at least not at the same level as our current, you know, current voices that are published. And that's so amazing. We've worked with kids to create stories and they've just made just the most beautiful stories that we publish and the nuance of it, you know. I remember a little girl saying that she read a story where the little girl was running down the street and she could hear the beads click-clacking in her hair and she could hear it, you know. It was the nuance of being able to hear it that was so important to her, and that's culturally inclusive. Like, I think people get scared of the idea of inclusive content in the, especially in the States right now. We're seeing a lot of book banning. We're seeing a lot of curriculum banning, which is very, very problematic. And it's not scary. It's very, you know, it's very benign often, culturally inclusive content. It's just about giving people that opportunity to really see themselves, the idea of windows and mirrors, right? You see yourself reflected, but then you're learning about the lives of some of others' lives. It's just so, so important. Anyway, so we're just taking a little piece of that and trying to do our part. And it's a special project and I call it my cathedral. I don't know if I'll see the end of it. I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface right now.
That's really funny. I love that. No, I really appreciate that. And I thank you for sharing all of that because, all of that, it is, I think if we all sort of took that knowledge, like, what's my part in this? How can I, you know, what am I contributing? We could see huge differences in our communities, huge differences in inequality, you know, in our society, in our systems. These are all like systems level changes, but they happen like at mm-hmm. the community level, at the individual level. And I think sometimes we get trapped in this mentality of, well, there's nothing I can do. But like, it's like, no, actually, there is a lot you can do. And if every single person understood there's one thing I can do to contribute, we would automatically, like, we would just organically be creating change that way. But
absolutely. Yeah, like when we started this, I started this to help my son. So just one kid. And now we've reached over, I think the latest numbers were over 7 million kids around the world with Shoelace. And it's just incredible how far you can go, you know, just one foot in front of the other. And just keep marching forward.
Absolutely. That's fantastic reach. And that's in 2 years, you know, 4 years, right? Because you said
We launched in 2020. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing. Congratulations. How big is your team?
Small team. It's a team of 18.
Wow.
We have a team focused on, we're in Ontario, and we have some in the States, some in Brazil and in France. So it's a super diverse team, which is also awesome. Yeah, I love working with diverse teams where people bring so many great ideas to the table. And you know, it's interesting because communication is challenging. Right? Language is important. Communication is important. It's our business. But it forces us to have conversations that are challenging at times just to get on the same page. And I don't know, I just feel like all of those experiences kind of make what we do more rich. Yeah, it's been so much fun. I love building high performance teams. That's actually my favorite part of my job, is to build teams of people who just work really well together and who love what they do. It's so much fun.
Right. I am curious because we've chatted a little bit about, you know, media and the role of technology. And so especially because, you know, this is International Women's Month. And
yeah.
I'm curious about some perspectives around, you know, because you mentioned like for yourself, right? Like you enjoy building teams. It's one of the most like inspiring pieces mm-hmm. parts of your job. Like to me, that sounds like, you know, around like talking about like women empowerment, right? Like you feel empowered in your role when you get to like do that. But, you know, then we're sort of in this space where this is what makes me feel empowered. And then I'm also in the media space where I'm seeing this projection of what women empowerment is. And so I'm curious, I guess I'm just, it's a very open-ended question, but I'm very curious what your perspectives are. Because I think for myself, when I see women empowerment portrayed in media, it is so hard. You know, it's like this, it's got this like kind of badass mentality. Like that is a woman empowerment. But like for myself, like even what you just described, like to me, that's a very like empathetic, very soft mm-hmm. expression of women empowerment. Right. And like, I think that that's just as beautiful. And I really honor that a lot more than this idea of, yeah, like, you know, being a woman empowerment is being a badass and all these things. Right. And so I'm curious what your perspective is, because you also, I think, sit on that border, right? Of like, I'm in education, I'm exposed to media. Like, I'm curious what your perspectives are on that.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm reading a really good book right now. The Mysterial Woman. You should check it out. So it's really great. It's very much about this. The badass, hard, you know, kick-ass woman, that doesn't resonate with me. It's always been a softer touch for me. Even when I was an athlete, I was competitive with myself, not with others. You know, I was never focused on winning. I was focused on kind of doing as well as I could. I really think that this is a moment in time in the world where we need more feminine energy. Like, I think this isn't about women. This is about a more feminine approach to things. And I really think that this is important in today's world where we have so many issues that need to be addressed. And I think that as women are kind of coming into their own in leadership positions, and they have for years now, but we've been so programmed in a masculine, like, you got to compete, you got to win society, that we've all been swimming in that water, right? So we all have that in us. But as we start to experience leadership and opportunities to make change with a more feminine energy, I really think that we start to see that there's huge value in this, huge value. And I think that as we all start making that change, like as a society, I think it will change our outcomes for the environment, our outcomes for education, our outcomes in everything that we do. And I think it's critical. Like, I think that this is a time in history where we really have to make this change to a more empathetic approach, to a thoughtful approach to things, to maybe a little bit of a quieter approach, you know? Yeah, I think this is, it's such a good question. And I think that we should have this conversation more. But I'm going to send you that link. I'm going to send you that book. I think you'd really like it.
Please do. It's something that I feel that I've kind of been going through myself as well. Like, even there are moments where I'll have these moments where it's like, there's this like intense response to something and I have to actually stop. And I'm like, why am I so upset by this? You know what I mean? And it's like, but it's just this like condition, like you said, this like overpowerment of that like masculine dominant energy. And it's not like it's that you don't need it. Right. But it's that balance of both of these energies. And so I've personally been feeling myself in my own journey where it's like this state of balancing both of these energies. Cause it's like, you know, and it is, and I feel for myself and my reflections, I think a lot of it has come from what we're exposed to in the media, this idea of what does it mean to be like women empowerment, how that's portrayed in media, how it's portrayed in the news, how it's portrayed in movies. And it's almost exhausting. You know, it's like, I'm tired of that. It's like, that's not me. That's not who I am. Stop trying to tell me who I'm supposed to be. Like, cause you know, to your point, it also never resonated with me. I'm like, that's not actually who I am, but it's who I've been told to be. And so you have all this like conflicting energy all the time. And it's so exhausting. Cause it's like, I'm just trying to like do my thing here.
No, I've had moments where I've said to myself, I don't think I was built for this world. Like, I don't think I was built for this world. And it's true. I don't think I was built for the systems that we have today. You know, capitalism at all costs, you know, it's not who I am. And I've often thought, can I even be an entrepreneur? Because I'm not that person, right? And it's challenging. It's challenging to try to succeed in a world that's built, for somebody who's not, you know, motivated by those things. But we're starting to make change. And I think that as a society, we can start to make change that's going to really dramatically impact all of us in a really positive way. But it's hard when you think the world hasn't been built for you. You know, it's really hard to get through that. So it's nice to have these conversations, though, because I know there's a lot of women thinking this way. Like, almost every woman I've talked to in leadership has felt this way. So it's a really good, I don't know, let's keep talking about it. No, let's absolutely have another chat just about this. We'll both read the book. And then we'll come back on.
Start a book club. I 100%. And, you know, and I think it's really interesting when I, you know, even as viewers and I get feedback from people all the time, it's what women and men who are both like saying this exact same thing, that it's like, it is hard to exist in the way that this world is set up. And it is very challenging. And I think it's like people, I think we are at a stage in society where we kind of, it's like we have this inherent understanding things, we need to do things differently. But I think that we feel we don't know how, right? We feel like we've not been equipped, which makes sense because of how the system is built, right? So it's like, that's where these conversations come really, really handy. And I think just being able to create that space for the conversation, for the dialogue, I think it just creates that sense of safety, right? Like holding space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to be patient, you know, these systems were built over a long period of time, hundreds of years. So we have to be patient and just realize that, again, just one foot in front of the other, right? We're all just doing our best every day. It's a mindset that we all have to be a little bit patient and a little bit more empathetic and kinder to one another, for sure. But we might not see the end of it, Vanessa, unless we have this life extending technology. But yeah, I think that the new generation coming up really inspires me in how they're approaching challenges, how they're looking at the world's problems. I really think that there's opportunity with young people coming up.
I love that. And I feel like from yourself, because with, you know, with your audience, who you work with and your customers, you know, I imagine you must see a lot of that. So, and I agree with you too.
Yeah.
You know, I've done a few different projects and it is inspiring to see. You know, I'm in impact investing, and you know, the amount of young like students come in and they want to invest their money in impact ventures, which is crazy to me. It's like, you know, like these are students, and you know, minimum investments like $2,500, like not a lot, but like for a student who's saying like, yeah, like I'm socially aware enough to understand, I want to know where my money is going. Like it's a very, it's very different, and it's very inspiring and it's very uplifting. And you know, for myself, I'm like, I'm really happy I get to contribute in this way and help create for those future generations, because I think it's really amazing. The other thing I was, the other reflection I wanted to make is we're talking about like women and leadership, and I've really, as a woman, had to really understand the difference between being in my power versus being in power. And, you know, and I think those, just how that even kind of resonated in the body, right? Like, it's just, it was just, it was a very interesting reflection that I had to make in my journey, and really understanding the difference between the two and what it meant and how to embody like the truth, right? Being in my power is way different than being in power. And one of those has a very truthful intention, and the other one is that like concocted, this is what you're taught, this is what you're supposed to be. And so I'm kind of curious, you know, what comes up for you in those words, what comes up for you?
Well, what you're saying about, you know, feeling it in your body, how does it feel for you when you feel in your power, Vanessa? Like, what's the feeling you get?
It's like this warmth. It's like a warmth feeling, and it's very like kind of flowy, like natural, like loose almost, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's comforting, it's safe, it's just like it's like I'm just like,
it's easy.
Exactly, like a nice breath of fresh air, like it just, it feels nice, which is not a great word. Nice is not a great word, but it's like simple. That's how it feels. It just feels,
It feels easy. It feels right. You know, really listening to your body. This is something that I got good at as an athlete, and it's something I've been working on again now in business. Because when I feel, when I have that feeling, everything is going right. You know, I can feel it in my throat. I can feel it in my jaw when I'm not approaching something the right way. There's a very, very strong physical reaction to that, and I've got to, it's really important to listen to, you know, to, yeah, it's so important, because that feeling of being loose, of feeling easy about something, it really is, it's a reflection on the fact that things are, they're going well. But you know, that this speaks a lot to that feminine energy again, right? Like, if I want to feel like I'm in power, it feels tight. It feels, it's a very different feeling. So I love that question too. I think being in tune with your body is critical. And when you start to feel that tightness somewhere, you know, it's really a time to reflect, like, what's going on. That's just not right. If we can just give ourselves time to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find for myself, I was doing something, it was probably last week, and I woke up one morning and I had this insane tightness, kind of like in my groin area. But like, it was interesting, because I woke up and my first thought was, oh, I wonder what stressed me out yesterday. Like, why was I so tense yesterday? Like, that was literally how, because I knew, I was like, this is a very weird thing. So I was like really stressed or tense about something yesterday. Don't know what it was. But you know, in the moment it was happening, and it took me 24 hours later to wake up the next day and go, oh, like, and that was not, it's not like a physical fitness workout thing. It was like a different type of like strain that I was like, oh. And my very first thought was like, I wonder what stressed me out yesterday that I was like holding on to this all day long. And then suddenly I was relaxed again to feel it. And then I was feeling like the pain of it now. Right.
Isn't it crazy? Our bodies are so powerful. I remember when I was an athlete, the best race I ever had, it was a 1,000-meter race. So almost, it takes almost 4 minutes. So it's, you know, quite long to be going as hard as you can. And I remember starting the race and kind of my last moment of thinking. And then I finished the race. I wasn't even out of breath. Like, I felt like I almost had floated over the water for the whole 4 minutes. I won the race. Like, it was one of my best races of all time. I think it was a Canadian record at the time, but it was, I didn't even feel like I had used a muscle. It was the most incredible thing I've ever been through in my life. Almost magical. And so I've always wanted to try to recreate that in different parts of my life. I guess that's the true sense of flow. It was awesome.
Oh, I love stories like that, because it is magic. Literally, it's magic. It like feels like magic, and you're just like, but it's like beautiful, because it's just, you're present, right? Like, you're fully present, you're like fully connected. It's just, it is such a beautiful experience. And I always considered, you know, a lot of people think like mindfulness is meditation and all these things, and it is, but mindfulness is also that. It is that flow state. Like, you can be mindful in like a workout or whatever, because like, it is about that flow state. It's like that connection between mind, body, soul, breath, like Yeah, and it's just such a beautiful experience. You can experience that anywhere, and it's really wonderful.
You just made me think of something. I remember, like, maybe 6 months ago, I hate going to the dentist, hate it. I had a bad dentist experience at one point in my life, but I was in the dentist chair, and I was able to just kind of breathe through it like that. And I don't think I was in a full state of flow, but I was in a state where I was just looking around thinking, this is actually really, really good. And I was so proud of myself. I left the dentist thinking, my mind work is really, it's really paying off. You can do it in the dentist chair. You know, I think that's a win, a big win.
You're like, I can't wait for the next dentist appointment now. Yeah, yeah. Who else should I call? Should I call up the doctor? Like, where do I need to go now?
I was literally sitting there just thinking, this is actually pretty nice. Anyway, it's the mind is a strong thing, and it's really nice to train it. It's not easy, right? It takes, like any kind of training, it takes commitment, it takes discipline, you know, daily work, but it's really worth it.
Absolutely. I have one more question I wanted to ask about, because we've been chatting a little bit about, you know, like women empowerment. You know, we even touched on like things like society. And I think for myself and my own journey of this, like balancing out the masculine and feminine energies, one thing I've really had to process and, you know, process through the body and really have to sit with was shame. You know, shame, I learned how much space it took up in the body, and I had to really sit with it and kind of understand, like, where did this come from? You know, why is this here? And I guess I'm kind of curious, you know, I think shame is very heavy. And I think especially when we deal with things like not even just women empowerment, but like empowerment in general, when we talk about our, you know, minoritized community members, you know, shame is such a force, you know, it's very, very strong, and it has very negative repercussions for us individually, but also collectively. And so I'm curious, you know, what's maybe your perspective or thoughts on the role of shame, maybe in society, how it impacts women, et cetera?
Oh, that is a heavy question. It's a heavy question because I went through some real challenges with shame in my life. An experience in high school that led me to feel shame for a long time. I didn't even realize what it was doing to me until years and years later, where I was able to see how it was holding me back. Because I took it on in different ways of just thinking that I wasn't good enough. Like, there was a lot of I'm not good enough. It might have actually been part of what drove me to be an Olympic athlete, because that feeling of I'm not good enough, the positive outcome of that was that I worked harder and harder and harder. But you can only work so hard. You know, you can really, you end up slamming yourself against a wall eventually and really struggling. And so, yeah, that whole I'm not good enough from shame piece is a very dangerous thing to live with for a long time. And shame's really hard to get through. I don't know if I have a good answer for that, other than it's not something that you can just kind of ignore and pack away. It's really something that you have to process and understand why you're feeling that way and get to the bottom of it and either work on, you know, the issue that made you feel that way to begin with, or just, again, just be kind to yourself and realize that it, you know, we're all just human, but you got to get through it. Because feeling not good enough, it can almost kill you. I think, you know, it's tough.
Yeah. I know for myself and my experiences, it was that, like, I was really noticing how, you know, like, you have shame, but then how the ego wants to pop in and kind of, like, you know, will tell you any narrative so you don't have to feel it. But a lot of those narratives are also kind of unhealthy, because it's like blaming other people. And so, like, it was a very interesting experience, like really having to, like, block out the world and really sitting with that and really observing, like, the shame itself, but also, like, again, like the ego pops in as like, well, you don't deserve to be spoken to that way. Like, that's just your ego. Right. And like, thank you, ego. You want me to feel better. I appreciate that. But like, you need to chill, because like, this is also not helpful either. Right. And so like, it was a very, very It was just a very interesting experience, you know, and to really have to sit with it and really observe how it all connects together. And yeah, like these narratives will pop in and they try to tell you all these other things, and they start to, then you start acting on these things, but they're also not really truthful. And you're also still just running away from the shame, right? Like most shame isn't really yours. And that's what I realized. I was like, when I started realizing this is not really mine, it's been like passed down to me from other people's stuff. But also, like, I think in society, we talked about media, like the, like I see media and I'm like, it's just, I feel like, especially as women and like, again, our minoritized communities, there's just like this consistent message of shaming other people, parents. I've seen advertisements from like tech companies that are like advocating for like AI and protect like the safety of your kids. And these are like shame based ads. I'm like, why are you like, you know, it's like shaming parents for not like, like being good parents, but it's like done in this emotional way where it, like you get the tears and it's like, oh, but like deep down, I was like watching this advertisement once and I was like, this is shame. Like, this is not, you want an emotional ad is one thing, but like shame is another. And then to disguise that shame under this like emotional, like the truthful emotional response, like that's not okay. And like, it was that when I started seeing like shame manifest in like all these different ways, I was like, this is messed up. Like, is this society? Like,
and we all perpetuate it, you know, like I think, I think it gets perpetuated because we don't analyze it maybe enough. I felt a lot of shame as a mom too, as a young mom owning a business and trying to figure out, you know, how do I be a great mom and be a business owner and grow a business. And I never felt, again, not good enough in either kind of area. And it just pushed me to go harder, be a better mom, be a better business owner. And it was really, really tough. And I never knew if I was achieving. I think it just put me in a perpetual state of kind of like, am I enough? And it was a really beautiful moment a couple of years ago. My son was at university, and my oldest probably suffered the most because I was most busy when he was kind of coming up. I'd be traveling a lot. I'd be away every month for 1 to 2 weeks. So I was gone, you know, not even there in his life a lot, which was hard. But he called me from his class. He FaceTimed me from his class at Acadia University, and he's like, oh. And he put the camera up to the board, and they were doing a presentation about Shoelace. And he was like, that's my mom's company. And he's like, I've never been so proud. Mom, I'm so proud of what you've done. And I could really tell it meant a lot to him, the fact that I followed something that was important to me. And it was just a moment of like, but I just wish, you know, if I could speak to my younger self, I wish I could let a lot of that go, because it doesn't get you anywhere. Like, it doesn't help. It really just only takes a window to your sail. So anyway, it's, shame's a really challenging thing, and we should really stop perpetuating it. But you know, you're good to notice it, Vanessa, like in the ads. I probably watch the same ads without even kind of processing that. So I think that's the awareness is really important.
You know, I don't know. It is something that I'm like, so, I just like, I'm in tune with it, because it frustrates me. Like, I have this visceral reaction where I'm like, why are we like talking to people this way? Like, why are we, why are we marketing like this? Why are we doing it this way? Like, why are we teaching people that this is how we should be treating other people? It just like infuriates me. And it's, I think it's the intentionality of it that it's like, you know, how can you be doing, like, with the example of the advertisement, it's like, how can you be doing this because you want to make a sale, right? Like, have you lost your intentionality so much that you're like resorting to this? Like, yeah, of course every parent wants their kid to be safe, but you can do that in a way without shaming parents for not understanding what AI technology is and the repercussions of it, right? Like, it was very upsetting.
It's interesting. When you're saying why do it, they're doing it because it's so powerful. It's probably the most successful way to motivate somebody is to feel deep shame about something. And again, like, it's kind of full circle in our conversation about the world today and just kind of the structures that we've set up, you know, being in kind of a capitalist at all costs society, you will do whatever you need to make money. Like, that's what people are doing. And so there's almost like this built-in excuse. Well, you know, we're a successful company and we're growing our revenue. And it is kind of an at all cost model today. And if we, you know, if shame is going to be the way to get people to do things, well, we're going to use it. And it's problematic. It's really a problem. We have to make change. We have to start changing these things. And you're asking the right questions, you know. These are important questions.
Right. I appreciate that. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I think it's a great way to end with, like, these are the questions that we should be considering and the reflections that we all should be making. And, you know, how can we, again, kind of contribute? How can we be aware, like, what am I contributing into the space, like, as an individual, but also, like, to the collective space of those around us? So thank you very much, Julia, for coming on the show. Really grateful for all your reflections and your insights, and love the work that you do as well. And, you know, always keep us posted. And yeah, send me this book link. I'm gonna check
that
out.
I'm sending you the book. This was so much fun. We'll do it again after you read the book. It requires a little bit work. So yeah, we'll give it some time. Thanks so much. Awesome.
Thank you so much.